Hello from the high country of Colorado. Thanks for joining the Microsoft MVP Virtual Conference and Access today. Some of you have never used Access. Some of you have used it a little, but some of you are seasoned Access developers. Julian is going to put up a poll to find out your experience with Access. In this session, you will get a glimpse into the incredible power of Microsoft Access. I am so impressed with Access that I've spent more than 20 years of my life with it, and I still learn new things all the time. Hi, I'm Crystal. I have free books, tools, and video tutorials that you can download and watch. I'm currently making a series on learning Access that will be hosted on GoSkills. Links to these resources are on my slide in the PowerPoint deck you can download from Channel 9 or the Web App Reference resource page that Pat Wood set up. On Patrick's site, there's also a zipped-up Word document download with the XML for the macros. I want to give a special thanks to Kent Gorell for jumpstarting me with Access apps. I began teaching and developing database applications on the desktop in the early 80s, but since I've fallen in love with Access and the competitors can't compete, the choice is clear. My slide shows a link to the analyzer for Microsoft Access on CodePlex, which is free and documents Access databases. A new release that can document report databases created by Access web apps is now available. My co-presenters today are Julian Kirkness and Brent Spaulding. Julian Kirkness has Access Apps in the Store, a help forum on LinkedIn, blogs, and more. Julian will show you features that will surprise you. He is one of the world's experts on Access apps. Julian, would you say hello?
Hi, Crystal. Hi, everyone. This is Julian. I'm an Access MVP from the UK, specializing in Access web apps. I hope, in this presentation, that we'll be able to inspire you to give them a try. I think you'll be surprised by what you can achieve with the technology. I know I was. Back to you, Crystal.
Thank you, Julian. Julian does some amazing things, some of which I'll show you today, with Access web apps. Brent Spaulding will be showing you how to link to your data in your Access apps from the Access Desktop, Excel, and SQL Server Management Studio. Brent and his wife Vicki live in rural Virginia with their 10 children. Brent, would you say hello?
Hey, Crystal. It's good to be here today with you and Julian and Pat to illustrate the paths of innovation that Access web applications can lead us down. Today, I'll be showing you how to connect to the SQL Azure database that Access web applications create. I'll be connecting from outside of the Access web application environment. Specifically, I'll be connecting to the Azure data using the Access desktop environment, an Excel workbook, and SQL Server Management Studio. By connecting in those environments, we can enable users, power users, and data analysts, as well as developers and administrators, to explore their own paths of innovation that, of course, begin with Access web applications. Thank you all for joining us today, and I look forward to illustrating these concepts for you later on in the presentation. Back to you, Crystal.
Thank you, Brent. Someone else who has helped prepare resources and reference material for you is former Access MVP Patrick Wood. Pat set up a page to host information on this topic and also has donated Azure space for Access developers to learn. Information is on the page. Pat is one of the world's leading experts on developing Azure projects and will be sharing information about free resources available to developers. Another special thanks to Jeff Conrad at Microsoft, who provided lots of reference links for the deck. Many of you recognize Jeff's name as the author of the Access Inside Out books. Jeff was also an Access MVP and is now writing great help for Microsoft and helping the help get better. Thanks also to Jeff Griffith for providing links and information. Jeff, also a former Access MVP and former Access team member at Microsoft, writes books on Access. If you have a question that doesn't get answered during the session, please download the PowerPoint presentation deck and contact one of us. Hope you enjoy the presentation. Thanks for connecting. For those of you that are new to Access, let's talk for a couple minutes about what a database is. A database is a collection of related information. Database applications allow you to define how your data will be structured and related. You can CRUD, which stands for create, read, update, and delete information. You can also manipulate data and control the way the information gets in. Access is a database management system that provides a way for you to manage your information. There are two types of databases you can build with Access. In this session, we will focus on web databases. A web database, or Access app, is accessible from anywhere with a connection and uses macros to automate tasks. The other type of database you can build with Access runs on the desktop. Access desktop databases have been used for more than 20 years and are incredibly powerful. Desktop databases can link to the data in your Access apps. Access web apps are not replacing what we have on the desktop. They are enhancing it. Access web databases, or Access apps as they are called, are the perfect data collector to gather information in the field. Do you want to input data from somewhere other than your office? Just set up a little Access app and collect it. With an Office 365 package, such as Enterprise, that includes SharePoint hosting, you have everything you need. I'm going to show you a really small web database. We will see how to keep track of location and travel information and use macros to generate URLs showing a specific address or route for Bing Maps. Julian will show you a much bigger Access web app. Brent will then show you how to link to all that wonderful web information from the desktop. What is a database? What's at the bottom of this diagram? Tables. Because that is where you have to start. Tables are where information is stored. Lists and lists and lists of information that are related to each other. Tables are defined by the fields they are tracking, which are represented in the datasheet view by columns. Each row of information in a table is called a record. Each record can have a value in each field. Other objects, such as queries and views, get their information from tables. The primary key of a table in an Access app is an auto number field, whose values are unique and automatically created when new records are made. On top of tables are queries. Queries can pull information from more than one table with criteria to limit the records and sort however you like. On top of tables and queries are other objects. In Access apps, views are used for updating information, menus, and dashboards. Views can be used to add, edit, find, and display information. Views in apps are analogous to forms in desktop applications. Desktop applications also have reports. To automate Access apps, macros can be defined and launched. On the desktop, modules containing VBA code can be used in addition to macros. Why go to the cloud? Maybe part of your business doesn't happen in your building. Maybe you have sales and deliveries and other things that happen outside the office. You need to record that data and move it to the office. Access apps are managed by SharePoint. The portal or door is your Office 365 menu. You can manage users and permissions and utilize other services such as document storage. You do not need to know how all of this works to build an Access app. Just like a car, you get in and turn the key and use the car without knowing how to fix the engine. You can do quite a bit with SharePoint. However, we are not going to talk much about SharePoint other than to say that is how we are going to get to our Access apps. What are the strengths and weaknesses of Access apps? You can develop fairly quickly, since views are automatically created for all your tables. You can also build some very powerful macros, which take more time. When the Access Web Databases first came out, there wasn't a whole lot you could do with them. Microsoft has added a lot of power under the hood. They've been listening. So if you haven't seen the latest version, I highly recommend you take a look. There's a lot more you can do now. You can secure the database, which is being done by Azure on the back end and managed by SharePoint. You can get to your apps from anywhere, provided you have a connection. The biggest weakness is that you can't do as much on the web as you can on the desktop. The databases running in the cloud are running in a browser. For them to do all they can, running in a web browser is pretty amazing, in my opinion. Macros can be limited, but if you're clever, you can get out that duct tape and baling wire and do just about anything if you have the persistence to stick with it and figure out how to do it with simple commands. You can create compelling apps, such as what Julian has done, and you will see shortly. When you are building views to display on the screen, there are different types of controls you can use. Let me show you how some of them work. I am designing this database. The navigation pane shows objects just like I would see them in a desktop database, F11. The views are listed under Forms in the navigation pane, and at the bottom you'll see I have two data macros to calculate the URLs for the Bing maps. I click on the Launch button to see my app in the web. The app is now running in a browser. I have a table called Locations, with places I travel to. This is obviously sample data, maybe places I would like to travel to. This table stores the name of the location, address, website, and picture. As I change the data, the map references are created for me. A data macro runs on the table on update event that calculates the URL for the Bing map and then writes the URL to the hyperlink field. On the view, I can click on this hyperlink to see a map of the location. A screenshot of the macros used by this database are included in the PowerPoint presentation download. I can zoom in and zoom out of the Bing map, do everything I would do on a regular Bing map, because this is a regular Bing map. I've only supplied URL parameters to hone in on a specific location. When I'm done looking at this map, I can go back to my database web page. I use the filter on the left side of the list view for locations to find the 1600 Pennsylvania record. You may recognize this as the address of the White House. Currently, there is no picture. To add one, I click on the Edit button, then click the Add Image link in the Picture placeholder. I click Browse, paste in the path and file name to the image, or I could browse, click Open, then OK in the Add Image dialog box. I click the Save button, and an image of the White House appears. This is the locations table. I also have a table to keep track of travel information, where I travel from and where I travel to. The record displays travel between the Bachman House and Wolf Trap, since I'm going to go to a concert. Or actually, I already went to the concert. This is sample data. The travel happened in the beginning of May. The locations are also links. I click on the Wolf Trap location, a pop-up view displays the location's record. I can edit information, go to the website, or show a map of the location. There is a place to enter the beginning and ending odometer readings, so distance can be calculated. Although the web database doesn't have a relationships diagram tool, you can simulate it using the design view of a query. Put the tables you want to document on the query, resize, and move field lists. Then take a screenshot. While we are traveling, we have expenses. To create a new object, such as a query, click the Advanced icon on the Home ribbon and choose Query. You can also create new views and macros. We can create everything but the table from here. Click on the Table button on the ribbon to toggle the display of the Home view, which shows a link on the right to add a blank table, and icons along the bottom to import from Access Desktop databases and other applications. We are going to create a new blank table to keep track of travel expenses. Before we can create a table to keep track of the actual expenses, we should create a table so that we can look up the expense types, since they will be usually from the same list. I click on the link button to add a new blank table. The first field is the primary key, denoted by the key icon to the left in the record selector box. The primary key is a unique identifier for this record and means there will be a unique value on every record. I change the name of this field to be more descriptive and add a field description. The data type is set to auto number. This is just an automatic number, which means it is a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and it is going to automatically get a value. Each value is automatically going to be unique. I create a field to keep track of the expense type, and that will be short text, like meal or hotel. If you look in the lower pane, you will see that the character limit for short text is 220. 220 is the limit for the number of characters that can be indexed. You can increase the character limit to 255. Another thing I like to put in all the tables I create are tracking fields. The first one is called DTM Add, which is the date time a record was created. I set the default value to the now function. Some new values are created automatically. I copy the DTM Add field by clicking on its record selector and pressing Ctrl-C. I move to a blank new line, paste, and create another tracking field called DTM Edit, which will be updated by macros when records are modified. I click on the Save icon and call this table Expense Types. Click on the Datasheet view to add information. Each row is a different record. Expense types might be a meal, or hotel, or gas. What are some other expense types?
Entertainment.
Entertainment. Brent, thanks. That's a good one. Now that we have some expense types, let's see where they will go. The trips table is to group travel records, which then become legs of a longer trip. When I open my travel table, I can pick a trip I have already created, give it a leg number, and a leg name. If I allocate expenses to the travel table, I will be able to aggregate them for a longer trip. In the travel table, there is a primary key called Travel ID that uniquely identifies each record. In this case, it will be from the Bachman House to Wolf Trap. Just like the locations table, there is a data macro calculating the URL to a Bing map each time the record is updated. For travel, the map shows the route between the first and second location. With the location information, Bing has automatically mapped the route for me. Along this route, things could happen that I might have to pay for. I'll close this table. Here is the expense types table I created. I'm now going to create another table so that I can keep track of my expenses while I am traveling. I change the name of the primary key and create another field. I need to link this expense record to a travel record, so I'm going to look up the travel ID from the travel table. Change the display field to what you want to show. I choose the calculated route name. Description is the travel record. Obviously, because I have an expense, I have an expense type. This is also going to be a lookup to the table we just created with expense types. The value to display is set to the second field, the text field called XType, which is good. I go to the design view of the expense types table, select the tracking fields, and press Ctrl-C to copy. I paste the tracking fields into the new table I am designing, click the Save button, and call the table Travel Expenses. I right-click on an object tab and choose Close until only my home view is open. I click the launch icon in the upper left to launch the app on the web. Now, I didn't create any views. I just created tables. But now, when I click on the expense types table, I see I already have views. Access has defined a list view and a data sheet view for me. The list view has a list of the main information for each record on the left that you can click on to quickly find the detail which is shown on the right. In the view selector, I click on the data sheet icon to see the data sheet view. We did not create either of these views. They came with the table. I open the travel expenses table and select whichever view I want from the view selector. I click the Add button on the action bar, which makes a new record. To identify the travel, I start typing in the travel ID in the autocomplete control. Access has chosen an autocomplete control where many might be tempted to use a combo box. In web apps, combo boxes are limited in the number of rows they can display, whereas the autocomplete control keeps narrowing as you type. You can type any part of what you're looking for in an autocomplete control, not just the beginning, as with combo boxes. Even though I am entering characters in the middle of the name of the travel, Access finds the record I want so I can choose it. For the expense type, this was a meal. How much did it cost? Oh my! What did we leave out of this table? How about an amount for the expense? We need to modify this table design. In the navigation pane, I right-click on the table and choose Design View. I add a field called Amount, which is a currency data type, to keep track of the amount of the expense. I click on the record selector, let go, then click and drag this field to where I want it to be in the order. Order doesn't matter, but I like to put key fields at the top. Now I save the table and close it. Now I go back to the browser with my application and press F5 to refresh the display so I can see my changes. Did I modify this view? No, I didn't. All I did was add fields to the table design. Yet, here is the prompt for the amount. I click the Edit button on the action bar, change the amount to $35.50, then click Save on the action bar. Now I have this beautiful web database out there that I can put information into anytime, as long as I have a connection. I don't have to be in the office. I can be on the road. I can be anywhere. I have a connection. In just a bit, Brent will show you how to get this information to the desktop, where you have incredible power to do just about anything you want. What I have shown you is just a tiny little application. I spent a couple hours setting it up. The views were set up for me, and then I did a little customization myself. Julian is going to show us a much more powerful Access app. So, Julian, if you're ready, can you click take over control?
Yes, Crystal, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can everybody hear? Great. I'll request control.
Oh, I have to say yes. It's okay for you to have it.
Okay.
So Julian has applications in the Microsoft Access or in the Microsoft Store, and he's going to show you that you can actually build something pretty powerful that runs in a browser. Pretty amazing stuff.
Right. Hopefully, everybody will be able to see my screen in a minute.
Oh, there you are. See you now, Julian.
Hang on. Can everybody see my screen?
Oh, I can see you.
It's not showing on my own link screen, so I hope it's there. Okay, I'm going to show one of my apps, which is available on the App Store, and it's got a 14-day trial if anyone wants to download it and have a play with it after this session. It's a human resources application, and not going to spend a great deal of time explaining what it's all about. I just thought I'd just show one aspect of it, which is a process for leave requests, requesting a vacation. But just to show, give you an idea, hopefully on the screen you can see a calendar of absences in my organization for the month, the fifth month of 2015. Switch over to looking at the people in the organization. I think this is going to take slightly longer than normal because I'm running the presentation over here as well. So hopefully that'll appear in a minute. So this is a slightly more sophisticated app than Crystal's been showing you. I've put quite a lot of time into making it look as nice as you can with the technology. I've got filter buttons here, so if I want to just have a look at people who've left my organization, I can click that one and I get a filtered view. All records, again, going back to everybody. I can filter, this is a standard feature of web apps, access web apps. Typing and speaking at the same time is very difficult. So we've got search facilities, and that's the same on all screens. If any of you have used human resources systems, you'll be aware that one of the main features of them is to provide a portal for employees through which they can do things like edit some of their data, request holidays and vacations and other kinds of leave, perhaps asked to go on training courses or even interact with their appraisals and reviews. So I'm just going to switch to a new browser window which has got the employee portal part of our application. And you'll see that I'm displaying this without any of the, what Microsoft, I think, call the Chrome around the application. So I've used a feature that they have to present an individual form or view in a browser on its own. Looking at an employee called Elle Smith. So if Elle Smith logged into the self-service system, she would have this information only. And I'm just going to show how we can
Hey, Julian. Request. Julian, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. Pat, I can hear you just fine. I'm connecting Pat in, and I just wanted to let him okay. know I could hear him.
Okay. The process here is I'm going to request a leave. My manager will then get an email, and that's the set out through the reporting structure that we set up within the system, and the manager can then accept or reject the request. This person has only had one vacation request in the past, and it was turned down. If I had a new one, perhaps I'll be kinder this time. So if I want to ask for a vacation starting, say, on the 1st of June until, I don't know, the 5th of June, at any time, I can check who's away in the organization. That will bring up a list of anybody who's away at the same time. But if that's all I want to do, I can click on this up here, which submits. The system will send an email to my manager, which we'll have a look at in a moment. And it will also calculate how many days that is, how many hours that is. So if you want to do all your leave management in hours, you can do so. So the second leave request now appears in here. And what I'm going to do now is I'll just switch over to my email and keep my fingers crossed that the email's arrived, which it hasn't yet. However, in the spirit of preparation, I'm showing an email here that the system sent on a test that I did earlier, and you'll see that it gives me some information. Oh, here it is. Some information about the leave, who made the request, and it gives me a link to go back into my self-service this time, so that I can either approve or reject that request. I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm going to just switch employees in here, which is something I can do because I'm, as a user, set up as a manager. And you'll see down here that there's a leave request task for me to deal with. I go in here. I can then click through to the actual leave request and either approve it or otherwise. So features that I have here, again, is I can see who else is away as a manager. I can also see a calendar of the appropriate month, see who might be away at the same time, and I can approve or reject. I can make notes on it and things if I want to, but I can just click approve,
and that will send an email back to Al Smith. Okay, so that's done. It's marked the task as complete, so that's the process finished with. If I click through to Elle's self-service screen again, you'll see she's now had a message to say that her request's been approved. I'm not connected to her email, so I can't show you that email. That is the process completely finished. I wanted to show you a few things about how these things are done. We were looking at the self-service screen for employees, and what they were doing was clicking on a button here called Leave Request. And what happens when you click that button is that the system opens a new screen as a pop-up, and the macro statement for that is very, very simple. Open pop-up and the name of the view and a criteria. So I'm wanting it to open for that particular employee. So I'm taking their employee ID, which is in a field called ID text box on the self-service screen, and filtering the records to that person. Now, what happens when they actually submit a leave request is a little bit more sophisticated than that. It's again managed by a macro, but in this case, it's what we call a data macro. So there are two types of macro. There are macros that happen when you click buttons and things on views, and there are other macros that happen either whenever they're called, or when certain things happen to, and they're called data macros or table macros. So when that leave request was completed or saved, the system then goes through a number of steps. It runs another macro to calculate the duration for the request, and that uses its working pattern. It checks to see any public holidays. It looks at working days and the hours they work each day and calculates the duration. It updates the record itself with the hours and days and so forth. It looks up the name of the employee asking for the leave. It looks up the email address of the manager rather than the authorizer. And then finally, sorry, that was the other way around. And then finally, it creates in the database, which also has a macro associated with it, which sends the email at the same time. So all of those things happen when the employee requests the leave. It's possible to build quite sophisticated workflows and processes within web apps. I personally chose the technology to build my apps for a number of reasons. One was it's very quick and simple to build sophisticated things. And secondly, there's an app store that you can put them on, sell them through, and so forth. And for people using in-house application, the same is true. That it can be put into your organization's catalog. It's very simple to maintain them and so on from there. How am I doing for time, Crystal?
Thank you, Julian. That was an excellent presentation. I think we'd better switch over. What you've done with Access Apps is really impressive. It's nice to get a glimpse into part of your application and see how it works. Julian has a 2-week trial version of his application, so you can download it and be prepared to be surprised that it was built using macros. Right now, we have a special guest, former Access MVP and Azure expert, Patrick Wood, who has something to say about a grow-up path for Access Apps. So to comfort those of you who have worries about investing a lot of time in learning and building and not having anywhere else to go, here's what Pat says.
Hi, I want to let you know the good news that with Access Apps, you have several options for grow-up paths. You can migrate your Azure SQL database tables with your data to SQL Server or another Azure SQL database not associated with a web app. This enables you to use your data with ASP.NET applications, Access, or any other application that can work with SQL Server. By using some SQL, you can also migrate your views, functions, triggers, and other database objects to your new database. Now, another option is to create a web apps report database and then convert the tables to local access tables. In the reports database, it is as easy as just right-clicking on the linked tables and then selecting Convert to Local Table. So there are a number of ways your web app can grow up.
Thank you, Pat. That is certainly nice to know. Pat has done an amazing amount of research on Azure. He has a wealth of great information on his site. If you're getting into Azure and want to know more, check out his links. Next up, we have Brent Spaulding, who's going to show you how to link and bring the flexibility of the cloud down to the power of the desktop.
Hello, Crystal. I'm excited to be here with you today, and Julian and Pat, of course, to continue the presentation on Access Web Applications and the paths to innovation that they can open up for us. Specifically, I'll be showing you how to connect to the Azure data using an Access desktop environment, an Excel workbook, SQL Server, and SQL Server Management Studio. By connecting in those environments, I can show users and power users and data analysts, as well as developers and administrators, how they can explore their own paths of innovation that begin with the Access Web Application. Now, there are some common tasks that need to be taken care of before we can connect in any of these environments. First and foremost, we need to get some credentials information from the repository owner. For example, we're going to need the server name, the database name, the username, and the password. And those are typically pretty cryptic, and you really can't memorize them. So typically, the repository owner will send us an email with this information, or they'll somehow communicate it to us. For example, when I communicated with Crystal on getting these pieces of information, she actually sent me an image with this information on it. We connected remotely at one time or another also, and I took a screenshot of these particular pieces of information. But somehow the repository owner should be able to get you this information. And from this information, we create a file on our system, our local client system, our computer. This file is called a DSN file. DSN stands for Data Source Name. A DSN can also be a group of settings in the registry along with a file, but we're going to use the file-based DSN for our purposes today. A DSN defines how applications can communicate with data. We will be using that file-based DSN today because they are very simple to manage and they're very easy to create. A DSN file is a simple text file with a DSN extension, so instead of seeing the .txt at the end, we'll see a DSN at the end. I personally use Notepad to create and edit most of my DSN files. Very rarely do I use, there's an ODBC tool, or very rarely do I use those types of tools to create the DSN files because they are very simple to create. This presentation is really not on DSN files, but simply put, we need to get the credentials that the repository owner has given us, and we need to get them into a DSN so applications can use this DSN to subsequently connect to the data. On this slide here, you can see the contents of the DSN file that I created to connect to our Access Web Application. Now, a word of caution to you. Many of us do use the wizard, and you may be asking, why in the world did I not use the wizard? Well, unfortunately, with Access Web Applications and the SQL Azure database structure, the wizards that come from the ODBC data source utility, as well as in the Select a Data Source wizard inside of Access, if you follow through those steps, the application is actually not able to connect to SQL Server. If it is, I personally haven't figured out a way around it, and I don't have any problems connecting using the DSNs I create with a text file. So I continue to utilize the Notepad utility just to simply create a text file. Once we have the file created, the doors of connectivity are now opened. So let's first take you through the steps of connecting using Access 2010, the desktop client of Access 2010 to be specific. Now the first thing we do in Access 2010 is we do open up an existing database or a new database, and we go to the External Data tab. And on that External Data tab, you will see a group called Import and Link, and then there's a button in there that says ODBC Database. Click on that button. From there, a window will pop open. There's two choices. You can either import the data from our external source, namely our Access Web Application, or we could link to the data. We're going to choose to link to the data today because we want our data to be live. We don't want to get a snapshot of our data using the import method. We want to actually link to it. So every time we open up that table or open up a form that is bound to that table, we will always be getting the latest information. Once we select the link to, then we click on OK, and we proceed to the next step. Then we select that DSN file that we created back there with Notepad. Then we click on OK. We will be presented with a list of tables. There's a lot of tables that get listed there. Some of them are owned by the Access system, and some of them are owned by the Access web application. The ones that are owned by the Access web application start off with the prefix access, and then dot, and then the table name. I make a note about these naming conventions because it's really important that you read carefully the names that you're linking to. It's very easy to get mixed up, and you might see a system table in there that is very similarly named to a table you might have created in your web app. Ultimately, though, we do select the tables we want or the queries that we want. Now, notice queries will actually come through as tables in here because it is a source of data that looks like a table. I recommend also that we store the password. Now, the reason why I want you to store the password on these linked tables is because of the fact that our passwords are very cryptic. And for our purposes, you're using it as a client-side database to extract information, to do some ad hoc stuff. It's probably a typical small audience for the data that we're linking to. So I encourage you to save the password. Once we have selected all those and we click on OK, all those linked tables will become available in your Access desktop client. You'll be able to create additional reports. You'll be able to create queries and, of course, forms, and then proceed on down the path as you would with a standard database and be able to wow your clients with many pieces of information or many different ways to present the data that is stored in your Access web application. Moving on to Excel 2010. Now, connecting through Excel is essentially the same. We use the DSN to connect to the data, just like we're going to use the DSN in just about any other application you'd use that you'd want to connect to this data. But the process is, in my opinion, a little bit more complex in Excel. But nonetheless, it's one of those situations. It's intuitively obvious to the most casual observer after you've done it once. Here we go. Connecting from Excel, we do use the DSN that was created already in the common tasks. Then once we have the workbook open, or an existing workbook open, or a new workbook, we click on the data tab. In that data tab, there is a connections group, and then subsequently there is a connections button. Once we click on that connections button, there is a dialog that is presented to us, and it is so we can click on the add button. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the DSN to be recognized by the workbook. So we're going to add the DSN to the workbook. So we click on the add button, and then we are presented with the next step. And it's asking us, which DSN do you want to add, or which connectivity do you want to add, or which connection source, or which source of data do you want to add to? As you see in this particular example, there is no existing connections. So we want to browse for more connections. And when we browse for more connections, we will ultimately select our DSN file, the DSN file that we used in Access as well. Then we'll click on Open, of course, and then we'll promptly be presented with a list of tables, the list of tables that is in the Access web application. Now, the list is presented slightly differently in Excel than it is in Access. In Excel, they actually tell you what the name of the table is, and they separate it from the owner of the table. And the tables we will likely be choosing from will be owned by Access and not the Access system or not SIS or anything of that nature. So we'd select the table that we want to actually dump into the Excel workbook. Now, one thing that's different about Excel and Access, the Access desktop client, is that each connection we define in Excel is one singular table. So if we want to have 14 different tables linked to 14 different sheets inside of Excel, we would need to define 14 different connections. And each of those connections would be based off of that DSN file. So in Excel, a connection is essentially a DSN file with one associated table or one associated source. Whereas in Access, remember we selected the DSN file, but we had the ability to connect to all the tables in one fell swoop. Well, in Excel, it's different. You have to define each table you want to link to as a separate connection object, a separate workbook connection object. After we select the table we want, we'd click OK, and then we'd close that workbook connection dialog. Inside of this workbook, we have now defined what Excel can connect to. We haven't retrieved the data yet. We've just defined what Excel can connect to. Now we want to actually get the data. So from the ribbon, we click on the Data tab. There's a group over to the left. It's called Get External Data. And in there, there is a button that says Existing Connections. And from there, we can select the connection that we just added. So on this particular one, I called it vconf. Then when we double click on that, or we select the connection we just added, and then click on Open, we can then select how we want that data to come into the Excel workbook. In this particular case, I chose the simple path. I just wanted it to come in as a table. It can come in as a pivot table. It can come as a pivot chart, which does lead in nicely to Bill Jelen's next presentation. But I just want to bring this in as a table, and I just want to bring it into the existing worksheet. And we're bringing it in into the upper leftmost cell of A1. When it comes in, comes out nicely formatted, just as this next slide shows us here. It already has the data filters applied. It already has some nice formatting associated with it. Microsoft is very good about that, trying to keep things presentable to us and very easily searchable. So from this point forward, the data analysts can have their heyday with the data that is coming from your Access web application. So now we've taken care of some power users and reporters with Access, and we've taken care of the data analysts and accounting types who might want to connect using Excel. Now let's focus on the more advanced user and connect through SQL Server Management Studio. When we open up SQL Server Management Studio, those that are familiar with the environment, you're automatically prompted with this dialog box that says Connect to Server. And right from there, we enter in the credentials that we got from the repository owner. Now in SQL Server Management Studio, you notice we have deviated from the path a little bit here. We don't need a DSN. We're actually putting in the data that goes into the DSN. We're actually putting it into these dialogues as well, because we're telling SQL Server Management Studio where to connect to the data. So we enter in the server name, the login, and the password all right here. And then there is a piece of information that we are still missing, and that is the database. So to get to the database entry spot, we have to click on the options button. Once we click on that options button, we will immediately be taken to the place where we can add the database name. Once that database name is entered, we can click on the connect button. Then once SQL Server has a successful connection, you'll be able to see the tree of objects presented to you in the SQL Server Management Studio environment. And this is exciting for people who really want to get down in depth as to how Access web applications actually work with SQL Server. For example, if you create a data macro on a Access web application table, that actually is converted and compiled down into a trigger on a SQL Server table. And to see what that trigger actually does, or to see the languages or see the T-SQL syntax to it, you can navigate to that particular trigger. I showed a screenshot right here in this slide. You can navigate to the trigger. It's automatically named for you by the Access web application. You can do a right click on that trigger object and then choose script to new query window. And when you do a create to new query window, you will be able to see the T-SQL language that is actually written for that data macro. It's really kind of fascinating because that helps you write data macros and then see how they translate into T-SQL. And using that information, you can optimize the way you write your data macros, or even regular macros outside of the data macro world. Even when you write your regular macros, you can see the programmability behind the scenes. It's pretty exciting to be able to do that for us power users or administrators or those who are just curious. It really is a good educational experience as well to learn how to do more with SQL Server. Also, you can use the information that you gain in the connection in the .NET applications. You can use that in many ways. The whole goal is just to innovate. Innovate using Access web applications as the base. I've enjoyed going through this with you today. Essentially, what I've showed you is you can extend the capabilities through connecting externally. And when we connect externally, we can design specific reports. We can design some ad hoc queries, some forms, and we can do that all in the desktop arena of Access. And then we can analyze this information as well. We can analyze it using Excel. And then the advanced users can use SQL Server Management Studio to learn more about how Access Web Applications interact with SQL Server. And we can use it to help us in our .NET applications or pass through queries for our desktop Access applications. So the possibilities are truly mind-boggling when we think about all the different pieces and parts that can be connected and then used for productivity to get stuff done. I've really enjoyed talking with you guys today. My name is Brent Spaulding, and I can be found on the net under the pseudonym of DataDrenaline. I'm often hanging out on Utter Access. Just look me up and communicate with me through Utter Access, through their PM messaging. I'll be glad to answer any questions I can help you with. I'll hand the microphone back over to you, Crystal. Thank you very much. Bye.
Wow, Brent. Thanks. That was such an incredibly awesome explanation. DSN files are no longer a mystery. And wow again, what a big door to open. Collect data in the field with an Access app, then bring it down to the desktop, where you are only limited by your imagination. In the PowerPoint deck, there are a bunch of references. This was really amazing to get. Jeff Conrad gave us links for all of the Office.com articles on web apps, which would take you a long time if you started trying to find them. You can click on them here and read a lot of really great stuff. There are links for books. There are Julian's links, Pat's links, Brent's links, my links. In this presentation, we have shown you a very simple Access app that calculates URL strings and parameters to map locations and routes with Bing. You learned how to create new tables and track expenses while you are traveling, and that views are automatically created and modified as you create and modify tables in Access apps. You saw part of a much more sophisticated Access app by Julian Kirkness, which is available in the Microsoft Store. Pat Wood made a statement about where you can go with Access apps. Brent Spaulding then showed you how to connect to the information in the cloud from the desktop, where you can take advantage of great power to analyze, calculate, graph, project, and do whatever else you want. Access is a flagship product for Microsoft for good reason. Access is access. Folks just need to learn how to use Access better. I hope that Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is listening too. Oh, and I want to tell you, the presentation right after this is Mr. Excel Bill Jelen talking about data crunching with Pivot, and he goes into Power Pivot. Bill Jelen is an excellent, excellent presenter, so I really encourage you to stay on and listen to Bill. Thanks, Brent, Julian, Pat, and all who helped. Thanks to the folks at Microsoft. Carrie, Simon, Jeff, the Access team, the event organizers for the Microsoft MVP Virtual Conference, the content writers who develop help and examples and open the doors for those who have examples to share. And thank you for learning. Hope you build something great. Thank you so very much for spending time with Access and joining us today. The forums and the bloggers, the people who post code, thank you all. Through sharing, we will all get better.